Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Gals of Geekdom podcast. I am your lovely host, Crystal Williams, and I am here with my equally lovely co-hosts, Lizzie and Jazzy.
Hello.
I'm still on the process of dethroning Crystal from the throne.
I think we need to address the thing that I was... Not me. I mean, the Gals of Geekdom Twitter account is definitely not me. It's a random entity that works on its own accord, and it doesn't have anything to do with me.
It's the demon
but
in the corner.
I'm talking more about how you were saying you were the queen of transes yesterday. And
I am like, actually connecting that all together. So.
So what? Is this like a Gals of Geekdom cinematic universe, but on Twitter?
Yes.
That sounds needlessly complicated. You're making a good cinematic universe with that.
I am attempting to do so, yes. So I had asked people whether or not they would declare me the queen of transes. Seems like people like that, but then Jazzy over here was trying to dethrone me.
Because I'm a fucking queen by just naturally.
And Lizzie, I think someone else in the thread was trying to say that you were, but they were getting it all mixed up.
I am, as I said before, I still have the gender my mom picked out for me.
Wow, you still have your gender your mom picked out for you?
God.
Lame. Now watch as I slaughter Crystal for the throne.
I'm just watching.
We're going to go Game of Thrones on this bitch.
Neutral party.
It'll be pretty epic for the first three quarters, but then it'll get really, really stupid by the end.
Will there be an extremely nonsensical character turn because you need a character out of the way? So
yes,
you can have
yes,
it go
yeah,
for
probably,
literally no
I'll probably end up burning
reason.
A few. I'll probably end up burning a few villages, even though that's contradictory to my character.
Even though the entire point of your character was that you didn't ever want to harm innocents or children.
Exactly.
Your character is just going to end out of, for literally no reason whatsoever, just slaughtering thousands of children.
Yes.
Very in character. Makes so much sense.
Not so good segue. Not having nothing to do with slaughtering children. Let's get back on my Fast and Furious report, we'll call it. Need
yes.
a name for this segment.
Too jazzy, too...
The jazz and the jazziest.
Yes. Yes. Let's go with that. Yours is
jazz
better than mine.
Jazz and jazziest.
Yes.
So you
watched Too Fast, Too Furious.
Yes, I did. It was one of the dumbest fucking movies I've ever watched in my life.
Uh-huh.
And I loved it.
Uh-huh.
Like...
There we go.
That's the Fast
and the Furious movies.
Yeah, I vastly prefer this to the first one, and I know that's a hot take, but I had way more fun watching this movie than I did the first one. Mainly because it took the dumb car scenes from the first one and just made it the movie.
That last race action sequence is pretty damn cool.
Yeah, like, a lot of the action sequences were cool, and I liked a lot of the chemistry, like, even though only two actors returned for this one, Paul Walker and the guy who played the detective, like, they were the only ones who returned from the first one, mm-hmm. which was so weird to see, because I know Vin Diesel is, like, considered the face of this franchise, and now in this one, he's just fucking gone.
Yeah, it's very much retrospect sort of thing, you know, like, where it's, like, Vin is the star, but, like... That series didn't know what it wanted to do from the beginning. I mean, it didn't know what it would become.
Right. But I didn't mind because Tyrese Gibson was so fucking fun in this movie. He wasn't necessarily a great actor, but he was just clearly happy to be there.
Yes. And so, that is something you'll see as the series continues.
Oh, good. I can't wait to see more of him, because so far he's probably my favorite character in both these movies.
He is essentially, if comedic relief was a character.
Yeah, basically. One of my favorite bits in the movie was, like, someone's being an ass to him, and he's like, "Hey, real funny, Fonzie." I don't know why, that just got a giggle out of me. I don't know It's not even that good of a line, but something about the delivery just got me.
So I realized I haven't seen it in a while, but Lizzie here hasn't seen it. So do you want to explain in the briefest of terms what the plot is for Too Fast, Too Furious?
Please, please explain it.
See, that's the thing. That's the hard part. There's really no story to this movie. I guess they want Paul Walker to do a thing, because even though he's not a cop anymore, they're like, you're the only one who can do thing, Paul Walker. But also, you need your friend Tyrese Gibson, who hates cops, but you're not cop anymore, so he should be fine.
You're not cop anymore.
So, Tyrese and Paul go on a fucking adventure, and like, it tries so hard to be heterosexual, but they are so clearly banging each other off screen. It's great.
Am I wrong in saying that it was set in Miami?
I think so, yeah.
Yes, so the first one was Los Angeles, the second one's Miami.
Like, the first one clearly tried to have a plot. This one was just, let's have cars race around, we'll think of the plot later.
And ludicrous.
Isn't that all the sequels, though?
I don't know.
It changes from racing to action sequences.
Right, because like I said, I'm experiencing these movies for the first time. These are like every right. movie I'm seeing in this franchise I've never seen before. So this was interesting because I didn't like the first movie all that much. It had its moments, but like I thought its attempt to have a story was just boring because the story it was trying to tell wasn't interesting. This didn't try. So I kind of had fun because it was just cars race around for 2 hours, and also Paul Walker and Tyrese Gibson are clearly gay for each other, and it's the best. And then I realized, oh shit, this is gonna be the appeal of the entire series, isn't it? It's going to try and be heterosexual, but it is so fucking gay.
Yes, that
I figured it out.
Pretty much.
Like,
you solved the mystery.
Yeah, like, Eva Mendes plays a character in this movie who I think was supposed to be Paul Walker's love interest, but, like, they have, like, no scenes together, so it feels like she's only there out of obligation. There's no romantic chemistry between the two. Paul Walker clearly wanted to bang Tyrese Gibson.
They needed a beard.
Yeah. This is the horse I'm betting on. This was clearly trying to be a gay movie in the most subtle way possible, because this was like the early to mid 2000s.
Right, and yeah, this one also introduced Ludacris in his when he was still in the, you know, he's still a rapper, of course, but you know what I mean. He was still in the midst of his stardom, I should say, where it was like blowing up.
And he was a lot of fun too. What was funny about watching this movie is that there's a minor character named Suki, and her actress, I was like, where have I seen this woman before? I know I've seen her before. And it turned out that she was, she played Kazumi in Paul W.S. Anderson's DOA Dead or Alive movie.
Oh.
Which okay. is one of the few video game movies that I think no one knows about. So
I saw it, actually, a long time ago.
It gets whispered in the hallways. I've not seen it.
It's like one of those video game movies that doesn't get talked about often because it generally, on a consensus, it's not good enough to be talked about, but it's not unspeakably bad either.
Yeah. It's not like the Street Fighter movie or the...
Right. But I think I think it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's taking a game series that's just about hot chicks fighting each other and does that. It did nothing. That's all it did. It's the perfect adaptation.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Flawless. No notes.
Yeah, like but yeah, in regards to Too Fast, Too Furious. I'll also say this. That sequel title alone is, like, the best fucking sequel title. I know I probably said that last time, but...
I find it a way funnier sequel title to parody than Electric Boogaloo, because I've been over the Electric Boogaloo joke for years.
Yeah, like, yeah, no, I'll joke, like, you know, how... it's clearly... Clearly, if there's a sequel to Batman v Superman, it needs to be called To Batman to Superman. but so, the, yeah, so Yeah, I wouldn't say it was a good movie overall because it was really fucking dumb. And if you're and if you liked the first one and wanted something that was a little more in its spirit, I can see how someone would be disappointed. Because, like, this has nothing to do with the first one.
Right. It's you're seeing, I would say, a glimmer of where the series goes in terms of its tone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're seeing, like, the early whisperings. I will say the next film isn't nearly as ridiculous as the second.
Damn it!
Yeah, it's definitely a bit more on the reserve side, but it does continue the trend of having a rapper in it with is it Bow Wow? Yeah.
Oh boy! But question: is it good?
No.
Oh, is it fun at least or?
No.
Is it the worst one?
Of the original three, yes, in my opinion.
But it's not the worst overall, is what you're saying.
Actually, I think it's the worst overall.
Oh, I'm excited. I'm going to, like, right after I had an entry I finally had fun with, I'm just going to come back and say, this was shit!
My favorite entry in the whole series is probably 6, but I think the best entry in the series is 7.
I'm looking forward to 7 mainly because of James Wan's involvement, and I always enjoy any film that he's attached to, so.
Right.
How many are there again? It's 9?
9 and then Hobbs and Shaw, so 10.
Yeah. So that's I'm watching I am watching 10 fucking movies for this. And you know what? I might as well go straight to Twilight after that. Don't even do a poll. I'm just going to do it. Fuck all y'all.
Yes, Jazzy. Yeah. We will fangirl about Twilight.
Does that mean I have to watch it?
I'm probably not going to enjoy it.
Does that mean I have to watch the movies?
Yes.
If you want.
No, it can't just be the two of us talking about Twilight, Crystal. You have to watch them too.
Can I watch them with Riff Tracks?
Go ahead. I have to watch them. Okay. I have to watch them plain and dry.
Okay, because I own the Riff Tracks for those, so maybe I'll do that.
Is the friction bad? Because they're so dry.
Yeah. But yeah, so yeah, I'd say Too Fast and Too Furious. If you're like me and you thought the first one was a bit too boring and not as interesting as it was trying to be and just want dumb car movie, Too Fast, Too Furious is dumb car movie.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm just going to warn you, the next actor in the lead in the next movie is not a good actor.
I'm gonna be sad anytime Paul Walker's not around, which means I'm gonna be sad after 7. So,
derail the conversation, but have you seen Baby Driver?
Yes,
I've seen bits and pieces. I need to sit down and watch it fully. I enjoyed what I saw.
Fucking love Baby Driver. It's great.
I'll probably have it on. You know what? I'll have it on standby after I watch Tokyo Drift because if it's as bad as I'm hearing, then
the only issue now with Baby Driver is the problematic people who are in it.
Yeah.
Goddamn Kevin Spacey.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
But someone else? I know the big other actors, Emil Elgort and Lily James. I was watching Lily Evans, my Harry Potter brain. Lily James and John Hamm are the other big names I remember from the movie.
Isn't Ansel like a creep?
Is he?
I heard he is a creep.
Oh, maybe. The last I remember hearing is that he had an OnlyFans. But okay. I, to my knowledge, no. But my knowledge could be incomplete.
He denies sexual assault allegations in 2020.
Well, that's a shame.
Yeah, I always remember when the conversation was coming back up about Baby Driver, they brought that, you know. And it was like, oh my god, Kevin Spacey and then Ansel?
Everyone's a shit in that movie except Edgar Wright. Please don't have done something fucked up, Edgar Wright, and make me immediately regret saying this.
Don't make me upset. Don't break my heart, Edgar Wright. Please. Right now, my least problematic white man award presently goes to Matthew Lillard. But Edgar Wright
is awesome.
Edgar Wright is up there.
Oh, 100%.
I have enjoyed seeing Matthew Lillard on Good Girls.
I need to watch Good Girls because that show looks so good.
I'm sad to say the only things I've scene with Matthew Lillard in them are the original Scream.
Okay.
And the Scooby-Doo movies, as well as the show, because he ended up voicing Shaggy. So
yes, he took over after Casey Kasem sadly passed. Yeah. But Matthew Lillard's great. His performance is great in all those movies.
No. Matthew Lillard is the best part of the Scooby-Doo movies because he is the best fit for his character.
I stand the entire cast of the Scooby-Doo movies. I think
the entire cast was good, actually. Everyone was good.
It genuinely bums me out that movie's... I think it gets a bad rap. I don't think it's as bad as... because, and I blame Doug Walker for that, largely. I think set this idea that this movie was, like, terrible.
I blame Doug Walker for a lot of things.
Yeah. But, it's not great, and it bums me out that it's not better. I really wish that James Gunn... I'm blanking on the director's name, so I feel really bad.
Roger Gosnell is who directed them.
I wish that the two of them had been able to make the movies that they wanted to make.
Yeah.
Because I think... I really would have...
They wanted Gay Velma!
Gay Velma! Oh my god.
They were taking the Brady Bunch remake approach, from what I'm remembering.
Like,
correct?
I don't think those...
Yeah. That's what they wanted to do.
Well, and James Gunn has said that the original version that they wanted to make wasn't as raunchy as people like to... make it sound. Mm-hmm. He said, like, it was never supposed to be like it was never meant to be a trauma movie, but it was supposed to be their original, and they were actually fine with writing and directing it for a PG-13. They weren't necessarily shooting for an R, but still, like, the issue with that movie, more than anything else, both of them really, less so the second one, is more of a problem with the first one. But the issue comes down to just different creative visions from the creative team versus what the studio wanted it to be.
Yeah.
And it makes for kind of an inconsistent movie.
I'll say this, the Scooby-Doo movies have very good production values. I'll say that right now. I think these films, on a technical standpoint, are quite good, much better than they probably needed to be. And I will say the performances, particularly from the main cast, are great. And I am glad, that, you know, a lot of them are, like, a lot of these performances are seen as such. Like, I don't think I've seen anyone give shit to any of the actors for how they portrayed any of these characters.
I don't think I've ever seen anybody have, no matter how negative their take on these movies is, I don't think I've ever seen anybody say anything negative about the cast, because the casting in those movies is so perfect. And I know no one likes Freddie Prinze Jr. I know that. But even his casting as Fred is like, that was perfect.
Like Fred is a bland character. This is going to sound mean. Fred is a bland character. Freddie Prinze Jr. is a pretty bland actor. So honestly, it kind of worked.
It worked perfect.
He's pretty good in Star Wars Rebels. Doing a voice role.
I've heard he's good in that.
He is good in that. He plays a good lead.
No, go, Jazzy, go ahead.
I was going to say, he did a good job in Dragon Age Inquisition. I forgot he voiced in that game, as well as Mass Effect 3. He was great.
I just don't like being mean to Freddie Prinze Jr., because, was he the world's greatest actor? No. But he wasn't, like, terrible. He always did the job. He understood the assignments. Like, he did his job. And he is, by all accounts, a perfectly fine person. Like,
So
people are so mean to him, and it's so unnecessary.
Right. And I've seen him give good, now that I think about it, he's done good performances, mostly in voice acting. Because, like I said, in Mass Effect 3, I thought he was fucking great as James Vega. The only problem I really had is, it's clear this character is supposed to be Hispanic.
No.
And Freddie Prinze Jr. is very, very white.
Is kind of the whitest white boy of the 90s.
Keep in mind, this was back before there was a lot of discussion on whether, it was okay for white people to voice minorities. Because keep in mind, there's one of the antagonists in Mass Effect 3 is a Japanese swordsman, and he has the voice of Troy Baker. So the casting was pretty inaccurate all around, honestly.
Yeah, the that movie does have incredible casting.
Mm-hmm.
Like everyone played their parts. They all came in and they did it, and they all as accurately as they could. They definitely felt like they were playing their characters. Like felt like the cartoon lifted into live action, for sure.
Absolutely. Well, because they all, like I said, I feel like every single actor embodied their characters so well.
I think the problems with the movie that I go back and look and see were just typical problems with early to mid-2000s kids movies, honestly.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like I said, I feel like a lot of the conflict that makes it frustrating is, like I said, the conflicting creative vision from the filmmakers with what the studio wanted.
Why couldn't we have gay Velma?
I know, I wanted gay Velma. I haven't watched all of Mystery Incorporated, the series, but I've heard that Velma's queer in that one.
Yeah, they couldn't say it straight out or even show it, mainly because this was like early 2010, so that was still kind of taboo in kid shows. Like,
it was pre-Kurosami.
Yeah, it was pre-Kurosami. It was I want to say Owl House is the new fucking standard now that episode.
I consider Kurosami to be, it was such a watershed moment.
Yeah,
Kurosami. You can delineate queer representation in kids' media.
Kurosami walked so that these other shows can run. Because I think the biggest problem with Kurosami is just Nickelodeon being Nickelodeon. Yes.
They had everything they could. That. They fought tooth and nail to get what they got. So I appreciate, I'm never going to get mad at a single creative person involved with that show.
They
did everything they could.
No, if you hear stories from creators who try to add LGBT representation in kids' shows, it's usually a huge fight. I mentioned Owl House.
Alex Hirsch.
Yeah, Alex Hirsch. Alex Hirsch talked about it. I am aware that with Owl House, which recently Kat now has a canonical I want to say lesbian, but one's bisexual, so how do I go about this?
Don't say too much, because I haven't seen the latest episode of Owl House.
Women love women.
Yeah, I will say it confirmed a queer relationship, and yeah. And from what I can tell, Dana Terrace and the creative team had to fight tooth and nail for this, so. Especially since Owl House is Disney, so.
It makes my heart so happy, though.
Yeah.
In a way that I don't think I fully, it's a similar thing to when I'm watching, I was talking about this, I think, before we started recording, but I was rewatching Fear Street. Mm-hmm. I only got partway through 78 in my rewatch today, but I was watching Fear Street 1994 and 78. And there's something just so, that makes my heart so full and happy watching these stories that are just unapologetically about queer people.
Oh, absolutely.
And queer relationships that don't live and die in their plot around homophobia and hate crimes.
Right. I mean, one of my favorite series of all time is the recent She-Ra and the Princesses of Power, because it is so unapologetically queer and openly so. It's not.
It also had to fight for its queerness, by the way.
Yes, it did. From what I can tell, Noelle Stevenson, bless them, had to was constantly at odds with Netflix throughout the series.
And DreamWorks.
And DreamWorks, this entire 5-series run. They put hints in early seasons about certain relationships, knowing that there was a chance that they might pull the plug on that the studios would pull the plug on it. Because you can see as early as season one that, Adora and Catra are a thing. And I don't even think that's a major spoiler. This series has been around long.
I don't think anybody doesn't know that.
Right. The fact that it does end with the fact that the two of them are a thing. So.
I may have gotten teary-eyed during that scene.
Oh, it's fucking amazing. Okay, it's probably one of my favorite, finales I've seen in my life. It is essentially Lesbianism Saves the World, the episode, the finale.
Lesbian supremacy.
No, literally, Adora's about to fucking die and Catra saves her with her love. It's cheesy, but I don't fucking care. I was so fucking happy at this moment.
It earned it. Yeah.
That does sound like an actual spoiler.
That was a real spoiler.
That was a real spoiler.
It is.
That's a huge spoiler.
This series has been around for... It's, again, most people know the ending by now, so...
One of my favorite, I don't remember what it was. Someone was complaining about spoilers about... I can't remember what it was now, but it was a book that was published in, like, the early 20th century. And there was a movie or a show adaptation. People were talking about it, and someone got really mad at them for spoilers, and it was like, bro!
Next, you're going to tell me Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father.
Wait, what?
Jazzy,
what the fuck? Really?
What's wrong with you?
Also, here's another spoiler. Rise of Skywalker was a shit movie.
I don't know. I don't have a lot of strong feelings about it, except for the fact that most of the major decisions it made was dumb.
It's just a corporate... It's just executive meddling the movie, honestly.
It's fine.
I hated it.
Yeah. I came out of it similarly. I really, really hated the retconning of Rey's backstory did, in fact, make me really mad.
That was...
I hated it a lot.
It retconned the entirety of The Last Jedi because fanboys got angry. Like, more or less, like, if you look at the movies as a trilogy now, as a three-film story, Last Jedi now feels so fucking pointless because of a lot of the decisions in Rise of Skywalker. And I think that's what pisses me off the most about it. Aside from, you know, completely, like, downgrading Rose, which... fuck off.
Also, yeah, that made me pissed. There's a lot of... It's whatever. I will probably never watch it a second time.
As far as I... It's funny because...
I will watch The Last Jedi and... Mm-hmm. And Return of the Jedi and Empire and A New Hope and even the I'll rewatch those so many times. I'll even rewatch the prequels because there's interesting things about them. Rise of Skywalker is just so...
Like, it's funny because, like, whenever I talk to my friend Austin about Star Wars, we kind of have this... joke that there's this kind of joke that he started that I kind of went along with, where it's like, what episode 9? That didn't happen.
It's a shame they never made it.
Yeah. He was doing a tier list of all the Star Wars films, and he ranked Rise of Skywalker an F, and I was like, but I thought that film didn't exist.
I also just I don't need to get the shippers mad at me. But I never... I'm such an enemy to Lever Ho, I really am. But I've never got the Kylo and Rey thing. I never got that ship and why it was so popular. And it felt really, really forced in Rise of Skywalker when they had that at the end. It just felt so forced.
I have a... complicated relationship with a lot of the Star Wars property, but I will say something that's slightly different in that I think Rise of Skywalker is better than any of the prequels. Like, genuinely, I think it's better.
This is just my perspective. I'll say this. As much as I don't like the Rise of Skywalker, I'd watch it happily over Attack of the Clones, because that movie's a fucking disaster.
Well, here's the thing. This is my point, actually, really, is I don't disagree with that. It's a better movie. It's just not... The prequels are bad in a way that's entertaining and interesting to me.
If we're talking Phantom Menace and Revenge of the Sith, I kind of agree with you, but Attack of the Clones was just insufferable for me.
I find, that's the thing for me about Rise of Skywalker, is it makes me mad because it retcons all of the things that actually made Last Jedi interesting.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I hate it for that, but...
And then it's just boring, and then everything else it does is just really boring.
Like, I think the only thing I liked in Rise of Skywalker was any moment Ian McDiarmid was on screen, because he was clearly having the time of his fucking life.
I did really like that one shot. This is getting really specific. Something I really liked, I did really like in Rise of Skywalker, was that one shot when Rey gave the lightsaber to Kylo through the Force.
Okay, yeah, that was a good
That was a cool shot. I liked it. They set it up decently earlier on.
I just find
it
funny.
I feel bad that that's like, this is me. I'm naming this one specific shot that I thought was really cool, and that's like it.
One thing I find funny about that movie is when, like, Kylo's, like, a Jedi again. Like, he's a goodie, and he's, like, no longer evil. Like, the outfit he wears looks so out of place and, like, fucking casual. It makes me think that they just dragged Adam Driver off of from filming Marriage Story for a second.
Because he's just wearing a sweater.
Yeah, and it looks like something he wore. I swear to God, it looks like something he wore during a scene in Marriage Story.
No, you're totally right. He's just wearing a sweater. He's just wearing a black sweater.
Yeah, no, he just came in for the fucking Marriage Story.
It's just a black
fight scenes.
It's just wearing.
I'm just having this image of him, like, screaming at Scarlett Johansson and then having to be dragged to another set to use a fucking lightsaber.
I can't remember which movie, sorry, this is totally unrelated, but because we were talking about going from one set to another, it made my brain think of this. I don't remember what movie it was Robin Williams was filming, but I had read this story once about how Robin Williams was filming another movie on the same lot or like across the lot from Schindler's List. Huh. And he used to go over to the set while they were filming, like in between takes, and he would like do voices and stuff for the cast to cheer them up.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
And just a story. I don't remember which movie Robin Williams was filming at the time, but that's just a story that makes my heart.
94, 93. So I'm trying to piece together the timing. Maybe Jack?
Maybe.
Huh. That's the first thing that comes to mind, but I could be completely off.
I'm gonna also say Jack was a movie that wasn't that bad, honestly. I know a lot
I
of
think
people,
it's fine. People shit on that movie so much. Like, and I'm like, it's fine.
Like, it's funny because, like, okay, I'm gonna be criticizing a shitty individual, no surprise, but, like, Doug Walker!
Oh no, who's that? I never heard of him.
Like, he I remember in his review, this always fucking annoyed me. This was back when I watched Nostalgia Critic religiously.
Pause real quick. It was Hook.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, but, that makes sense.
But anyway, so I remember he reviewed Jack, and even back when I was the biggest Nostalgia Critic stan you'd ever meet, because I was a stupid child with no taste, he kept criticizing the movie for, like, how Jack is not written like a typical kid, and it's like, well, that's because he was fucking, like, he was isolated
sheltered his whole life.
He was sheltered for his whole life. He was homeschooled. Like, he wasn't allowed to interact with kids because they thought it'd be fucking weird because he looks like an adult.
Well, this is a problem. Okay, we're talking about it now. I'm about to get into what my issues with Doug Walker is really broadly.
Oh, spicy.
Which can go to exactly what you're saying, which is that it's because Doug Walker is, like, utterly incapable of relating to or imagining a circumstance that is not exactly his experience and his life and his perspective.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that a cishet white man is unable to relate with other people's experiences? What?
You mean someone who was complicit in every shitty thing Channel Awesome did is incapable of empathizing with others?
It's just, this is his problem. And this, you can boil down so much of his criticism of so many things to him just not being able to relate to anyone other human experience. Not being able to possibly imagine that the experience of one person could be different than his.
Yeah, no, like...
So much of his criticism, particularly when you listen to him talk about female-targeted media.
Ooh, we're going there!
No, the way he talks about Mamma Mia, like, women are supposed to be insulted by it. And I'm not going to sit here and be like, Mamma Mia is a secret feminist masterpiece. But the way he talks about it, like, there's something to be, like, there's something wrong with this movie. Because he can't possibly imagine, like, oh, it must be so insulting that this movie is about girls singing and jumping around and doing makeup and laughing. It's like, no, it's not.
Right.
It's actually not.
I don't like the movie, but it has a plot, so.
It has a plot, it has a story, there's stuff going on, and it's, like, if it's not his thing, he can't possibly imagine why someone would like it. That's another, like, that an extension of this problem, is that if something doesn't appeal to him personally, that he can't conceive of the fact that there's still an audience for this, and that maybe you need to, like, he doesn't understand. The most important thing you can do if you're trying to act as, like, a critic or an analyst or anything of a film, you need to look at it through the lens of the person that's going to like it. You should be thinking, what is this film trying to do? What is it trying to be? Who is it for? I think that those are the really important questions you need to ask and consider, because mm-hmm. you need to figure out whether or not your issue is that it's not personally for you versus if there's something actually, like, flawed or wrong with it.
So are you seriously telling me that the creator of the critically acclaimed demo reel doesn't understand how the film works?
Or the critically acclaimed review of Pink Floyd's The Wall?
Oh my god. That's been my favorite thing. Watching people talk about that review has been one of my favorite things on the planet. Oh my god.
Oh yeah. Like, I've been watching, like, anytime a video comes out about, like, the Nostalgia Critic review of The Wall, I'm having a fucking party, because it's some of the best, like, responses to that video is some of the best content on the internet.
This is exactly my point, right? Is that Doug Walker, he could not conceive of the fact that the experience of being in British primary school in the 50s yes. was different than being in a suburban Chicago high school in the 80s. Like, he could, like, that didn't even cross his mind that these were different experiences.
It's so funny. It's so fucking bad. And I wonder how this guy was even popular to the point where he got, like, legitimate talent to guest star on a
Listen, I'll give Doug the fact, like, there are people who want to say he's talentless. No, Doug has very good comedic timing.
Yes, he does.
I think that's a very specific skill that he has, and I think that carried him really far. And that it'll make you laugh at jokes that maybe aren't actually that funny because he delivers them really well.
Right, like, he knows how to deliver, he just doesn't know how to write.
Yeah, he just doesn't know how to write. And that's why it doesn't hold up on, like, going back to it and trying to reevaluate it, none of the material holds up because you already know what the comedic timing is only going to work the first time.
I think what annoys me a lot about Doug's content is how contradictory he is when he talks about certain bits. Like, I remember, so way back in his early days, he talked about the original TV movie for It, and he complained that the clown was not scary. Then jump ahead to the 2017 film, he reviews it, and by the way, he set up a fucking live event before, like, for this review before the film was already out, so I'm gonna call
bullshit. Yeah, I remember that.
And say he was already he was ready to fucking hate it, so.
Of course, well, I remember he was all like, they're trying too hard to make the clown scary, and it's like, Jesus fucking Christ, dude.
It's like, what do you want? Do you want the clown to be funny or scary? Because you have two films trying to give you something, and you're not accepting either.
And here's the thing, I'm going to be clear, I really like both versions of Pennywise, both live action versions.
Same.
I think they're great. I think they're both great. I think they're going for, they're taking different approaches to what makes this character scary.
Right,
but
I prefer Bill Skarsgård, but I do love Tim Curry, so.
And, like, and I'm not gonna sit here and be like, oh, the It miniseries was perfect. It wasn't.
No, it's not. It's not.
It's great. Not.
It was corny as fuck, but it was a TV movie with a low budget.
But it was. It's a pretty nifty relic of the time, and I think it did it good for what it was trying to be. But what drives me crazy about Doug's review for that is that he's constantly yelling. First of all, he's like, wow, this is just a town full of assholes. Yeah, Doug, that's the point.
That's the point.
That is literally the point. That is literally the point. That there's something wrong with Derry. That all of the people in this town are terrible. That, yes, because Stephen King wrote about racist, homophobic, sex, misogynistic, shitty small towns full of abusive people. That's what Stephen King wrote, because that's what Stephen King knew as a child. So that's what he wrote about. That correct, Doug. You nailed it. That's exactly the point. It's a town full of assholes.
Yeah, it's like, he just, I don't care if he likes the fucking movies or not, but it's like, he just doesn't get them.
He he'll just say a thing like it's a criticism and not
I remember this,
an intentional point.
I remember this really annoyed me when he went to doing clipless reviews. I remember, like, because he would do this to review films that were still in theaters. Like, he did this for Wonder Woman back when that was in theaters. And there was just a lot he got objectively wrong about the film that you can figure out just by watching it now on Blu-ray.
Well, also, by his own admission, he has a terrible memory, and he can never remember, he doesn't remember plot points or character names very well, which is fine.
But then why
that's fine.
You,
but then maybe this isn't the career path for you.
And maybe in theaters.
If you can't remember the plot of the movie, if you can't remember the characters, if you can't remember what happened, then maybe you shouldn't be criticizing it.
Like, wait until the movie's out on Blu-ray before you do, like, a full discussion on it, and don't rely on your memory from seeing it in theaters. Because I remember, and he did this, like, and this isn't just Nostalgia Critic, he did actual videos where he'd talk about movies with his brother, like, how, like, after seeing him in theaters. And I remember this pissed me off about the Logan review they did, because he was like, oh, the film talks about this really bad thing that Professor X did, but they don't explain it, and it's like, there's literally a radio conversation and one scene in the movie that says what it is. It's not that hard, and it's something I noticed on my first viewing in the fucking theater. So,
do you guys remember his review of Mad Max Fury Road, where he tried to paint the misogynists and the fangirls like they were the same?
Yes.
He put them on equal footing. Hating this movie because you're a misogynist and you don't like women is equally as obnoxious as girls who just really, really liked it.
Who really liked
Tom Hardy. Because they
like
Tom Hardy. You are equal.
You are equally bad.
You're equally bad.
It's so shit.
It made me so angry. I don't even... Look. His final take, people make fun of his final take comparing it to a Roadrunner cartoon.
And that is bad.
And it's a bad take. But you know what? If you're just Joe Schmo and that's genuinely what you liked about Fury Road, was the actions and the chase scenes and the, like, cool.
Right.
That's fine. Right. That's totally cool. Good for you. But, like, you cannot stand here and claim to be a professional film critic and not understand what's happened. Fury Road is like the least subtle movie ever.
Yeah, it is. Like,
how do you not see, it's a movie about misogyny, Doug.
Yeah, it's,
that's
like,
what the movie's about.
And I think this is going to come back to something that, this comes back to a thing that's been bothering me recently in regards to Doug Walker. And it's something that came up recently, and it's not even related to his reviews. It's something that people are talking about that's really fucking annoying me. Like, so recently, he talked, like, both he and Linkara, not together because they can't fucking stand each other.
Because Lewis is a decent human being.
Right. Yes. They both on separate occasions talked about Oni Plays making fun of them. And Lewis said he didn't care for it. That was all he said. He just didn't care for it. He thought the jokes about him were mean-spirited and just didn't like it, which, even if you disagree with him, is a perfectly fine opinion to have. There's nothing wrong with having that opinion.
You are allowed to feel that way.
Right. Doug, on the other hand, was like, oh yeah, it's fucking hilarious. I think it's funny. And so everyone's fucking praising, like, sucking Doug's dick about the fact that he doesn't mind that people make fun of him, while Lewis was a bit more reserved about it. And it's like, and everyone's claiming, oh, Doug is a total Chad. And I'm like, yeah, a Chad who was complicit in some really bad shit that went on his website.
No. Here's the thing. I haven't seen whatever specific parodies or jokes these are that they're referencing, and I don't really care. It doesn't really matter to my point.
Right.
Doug does not get brownie points for this shit when he went and he compared people criticizing him on Twitter to fucking Nazis.
Right,
no.
It's like, did people forget
that? Did you forget that time where he co-opted an entire song that was about homophobes? Lynching queer people? Did he forget that, where he co-opted that to make it about his own cancellation on Twitter?
It's so fucking disgusting. It's fucking disgusting to me. Like, oh, he doesn't mind that people joked about him. Good for him. Cookie for him. It doesn't make him a good person, and it doesn't make Lewis a bad person.
And Lewis, did Lewis come out and bitch about it on Twitter, or did he, what, he answered a question he was asked, correct?
He answered a question on his live stream is the thing.
Yeah, okay. So and this isn't Doug specific, but this is the thing that bothers me in general, where creators or artists of any type, they'll be asked a question,
mm-hmm.
and they'll answer it, And then people will make it, and then the quote from their answer will just get spread around. People will be like, why is this person saying? It's like, they answered a question.
Right, and it's like, there's nothing
wrong about... Someone asked the question, and they answered it.
Right, there's nothing wrong with a public figure having issues with how people joke about them on the internet. That, it's perfectly fine to have, like, Like, I remember a friend of mine who voices in some big stuff. I remember, like, someone shared an animated parody of a game he voiced in, and he was like, I'm not sure how I feel about someone trying to imitate my voice like that. And it's like, it's fine to feel that way.
What do you mean? You're not allowed to have feelings on the internet?
Like, apparently you gotta be open to all parody and being open to made fun of, and I think that's just I think that's bullshit. Like, you feel... You can feel however you want about it, honestly.
While we're complaining about Doug Walker. Sorry, I'm being distracted by I got distracted by a thing. While we're complaining about Doug Walker, I just also need to say that he has single-handedly created this false narrative that they talk about virgins a lot in Hocus Pocus, which is simply not a thing.
Right.
He like made this up, and he's convinced the internet it's true. It's mentioned maybe 3 times throughout the movie.
Yeah, it's only mentioned like
no.
Yeah.
And because that's like a standard like witch curse thing. It's like a virgin will do the thing, and they make like 2 jokes about it.
Yeah, it's just so annoying. Like,
it does not come up at all in that movie, really almost at all. Like I said, there's 2 jokes about it throughout the whole film, and it's just like, it's a word that's in the curse, because that sounded spooky, so they put it in the script. And then Doug makes it like this giant bit in his review, and it's weird. It's so weird to me.
I'm someone who has a background in comedy, so I really hate Doug's views on comedy. The fact that he's pretty infamous for saying that he believes all comedy is based on suffering, which that is a dumb fucking narrow-minded view to have on comedy.
Who's suffering?
Yeah, suffering, like, the idea is that no matter what joke you tell, someone is the butt of the joke. Someone is going to suffer, basically. Which you can see a lot in how mean-spirited his humor is.
Yeah, it doesn't... That's a perspective. And I don't... That specifically doesn't piss me off as much as it does other people. I think it's incorrect. I think it's uncreative, but it's a perspective.
It's one that annoys me, because I'm biased, because again, I have a background in theater and comedy. So this kind of narrow-minded view on one thing that I have a certain love for is like, mm-hmm. What the fuck's your problem?
This is the Doug Sucks show, right?
Pretty much. No, I mean, Doug sucks, Channel Awesome sucks, the management sucks.
Someone else who made content off of the Channel Awesome situation to make get views, who talked about me once in a video of theirs, sucks.
I need to drop this other thing.
Who are you talking about specifically? I'm curious.
This person made a video... That was a documentary about the Channel Awesome situation.
Oh, fucking cinematic.
Cinematic
Venom.
Vomit?
Yes.
Fuck that guy.
Was it Venom or Vomit? I don't remember.
No. Fuck that guy.
All right, if we're going to spill the tea, then yes, Cinematic Venom. I am...
Oh my god.
I am one of the initial people that I essentially led him down the spiraling path of hating Channel Awesome.
Oh,
or change the channel. I shouldn't change the channel.
Jesus Christ. But
because
can I complain about one more thing, guys?
Finish your thing, yeah.
I am not done bitching about Doug Walker. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Because there's one other specific thing that pisses me off, which was his take on the Cheetah Girls.
Okay.
Listen, he sat there and he talked about the Cheetah Girls movie, and he called it, and he was talking about how they don't have any real personalities, and there's all this stock, they're just these four stock characters, they have to be defined by their color, and just letting him list all these critiques, and I was like, motherfucker, you're just describing the goddamn Ninja Turtles. Shut the fuck, like, this was the big catalyst to my reevaluation of everything he said and realizing his just inability to imagine what could possibly appeal to young girls. Because this was something that, like, it's girly. That's the only thing you're mad about, is there's nothing about this that is objectively of better or worse quality than the Ninja Turtles. It's just that this one's about, like, glittery pop stars, and you didn't watch, and you were an adult man. It makes me so pissed off. It's like, yeah, Doug, you're 32 years old. You're a 32-year-old white man. I don't give a fuck what you think about material made for little girls. I really don't. I really fucking don't.
But, Crystal, yes. I'm curious how you led Cinematic Venom to making that documentary against Change the Channel specifically, because I want to know how that twat of a person got into
just, okay, so obviously he had made the documentary about, you know, the whole movement, and it was actually a fairly positive one from what I recall of it. I don't know if you remember it. It was like an hour and a half.
I saw the documentary, and while I have nothing against what it was trying to do, I thought it was really poorly made and did not enjoy it. So.
Yeah, I watched it mainly because I was just enamored by the whole situation, you know? And it was like, oh, this is another documentary in support. Cool. I will listen to it. And I did, and then I forgot it not long after I saw it. But I had followed him on Twitter because he made it. Just because, like, well, you know, someone who is positive about the situation, or at least, you know, in support, I should at least give, you know, my thoughts. And then what happened was he was talking about, I think it was in relation to something about Blazing Saddles, like something like how it can't be done today. And then I got into the conversation going like, well, why do you want a movie to be done like it was done 40 fucking years ago? Like, it's that same argument about using the N-word.
Right.
And it was like, why would you want to make Blazing Saddles now? Like, and I replied and went back and forth a little bit, and I ratioed him. Whereas more people liking my stuff. And there was other people in that conversation, too. I'm not going to, like, say it's all me, but...
Right.
Yeah, he blew up at that, and then I just saw the decline. And then he just got madder and madder. And he deleted all those tweets, so I don't really have much proof of that evidence of that time that happened.
Oh, I believe you. I believe... that sounds consistent with his attitude from what I've seen. Like, the guy is a fucking dick.
Yeah. And then, before I finish this thought, I know, unfortunately, Lizzie has to head out, but we will continue.
I'm going to see the Suicide Squad. I am, in fact, in full Harley Quinn cosplay. There will be pictures on Twitter.
Hell yeah.
So go and see the movie, and we shall talk about it. Maybe not spoiler next time, but we will talk about the movie.
We will talk about it. And again, a quick reminder to everybody, I will not be on the next episode next week because of a family situation. But I love everybody, and I love you guys. Keep having fun.
Love you too, Lizzie.
Love you too.
Bye. Right.
Bye.
So okay. So anyway, the point is, you kind of got to see Cinematic Venom on kind of this dark road of being this prick who now suddenly is like, yeah, fuck, change the channel. They weren't my friends.
Right. Like, I was part of the group of people that criticized him. And then... And then it just blew up because, like, you know, he would do something stupid and I would either reply or, like, talk about it. And then it just, like, kept going. And then he attacked, you know, some people, you know, Erod's wife, who I'm actually friends with.
Nice.
But she's super super sweet, but like, she became this weird target of his obsession because he felt entitled after making that documentary that everyone would suddenly love him and become their best friend. And that,
yeah, yeah, I got that impression from watching his second documentary, like as much as I could watch before I turned it off in disgust.
The second documentary is when he flipped on everybody.
Yeah, where it was the downfall of Change the Channel.
I'm in it.
Oh, you are?
Not like as a main focus, but like as one of the tweets that brought up. I'm not the main person, but they are definitely like, you know, it was a reply to something that I said in calling me a snowflake.
Oh my god, he's such a fucking asshole.
And of course he has to put the fucking tweet in there with my name and nothing blurred out. Of course, you know.
Of course.
You have to share it to your thousands of followers. So luckily I didn't get blowback from that. But, you know, it's like, really?
Oh, what a dick.
The guy is a giant, massive asshole and a liar and a grifter.
Right. And then he did a third documentary, apparently. I never saw it because I had better things to do. But apparently he did
And then he complained about that he was the victim of all
this.
Right.
Like he did this documentary about all these shitty things he did, but apparently he's the victim.
And that documentary was talking about how, like, it should be okay for people to say the N-word and for be as bigoted as possible. And the things that he apologized for, especially the homophobia done, he took back all his apologies. Yeah, fuck this guy.
No, I can't stand him. Like, I don't know. I don't want to sound like a contrarian. I told you so, but I don't know. Even from the days where he did the first documentary, there was something about him that struck me as, you're clearly doing this for some sort of attention. Like, you're not doing this for selfless means, buddy. I can tell.
I didn't follow him enough to get that sense, but then, oh boy, I found out.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I just don't want this to be a call-out thing. Because this is kind of in the past, but, like, I know he made multiple fake accounts, and mm-hmm. he pretended to be himself, and, like, he pretended to be other people and to be a fan of his.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the way he talked was exactly the same on his alt account as his real one. And obviously, I don't have any physical proof of this. I can't do that, but it just was, like, way too obvious that it was him.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, just be careful about Cinematic Venom. He is a liar and a grifter, and he will use anything to benefit him, and he will attack you, and he will also play the victim and say how everyone was attacking his mental health and that he's supposedly a mental health advocate while driving certain people to deal with their own issues. So fuck this guy. all because it came off of a fucking connection to it. Internet drama with Doug fucking Walker.
Yep.
Yeah, is this going to be the rant podcast?
This is the episode where we talk about Fast and Furious and Scooby-Doo for a bit, but then, fuck Doug Walker!
Pretty much. Oh, man. There's another rant I wanted to get into, and I know Lizzie's here, but this is on my mind. So this is not, like, any specific, like, drama, right? What is just something I fucking noticed on Twitter, if you don't mind me going off a bit?
Sure.
Okay, so I loathe the idea that someone's intelligence is based upon the art they consume or enjoy, and half of fucking film Twitter is about how incredible they are at loving Martin Scorsese or, I don't know.
This is the kind of shit I parody
Francis Ford Coppola. Or, you know what I mean, like...
Yeah, this is the kind of shit I parody when I do posts where I'm like, oh, Redline is a very deep film when you think about it.
But, like, okay, I understand loving their works because those artists are talented. Francis Ford Coppola is talented, Martin Scorsese is talented, Kurosawa is talented. All these genuinely talented individuals, right, who've made these classic films, and I'm not disputing that. But the thing that pisses me off is the way in which these idiots not only misinterpret the films that they apparently love, but they hold it to such a higher standard to have this faux progressivism, to weaponize it against women who decide to maybe have a liking for a Marvel movie, or having a liking for, or maybe like a criticism of you know, Martin Scorsese movie or something like that, where they weaponize the idea that it's like, oh, you're just a shill for Disney, for big corporations, when that is not what they care at all. Like, I've literally seen the textbook examples of misogyny thrown at people because they said that they liked Marvel or they had a minor criticism for one of those classic films that they hold to such a higher degree. And that if you enjoy Marvel or you enjoy Star Wars or you enjoy any superhero movie, that you're inferior and that you enjoy corporate thought and that you're not intelligent enough to think for yourself and have your own perspective on things. Have you seen that?
Unfortunately, yeah, I've seen it plenty of times. I mean, I am a film buff, as you've plainly seen with every conversation you have with me.
Yeah.
But, like, I try not to have, like, I don't try to, like, have this idea of, like, oh, just because I like a film or dislike a film, my opinion is better than everyone else's. I'll have fun with the fact that I think The Purge is a pretentious piece of shit, but...
But you don't hold it above other people. Right.
No. Like,
yeah, exactly.
If people got something deep and meaningful out of these films, great. I am legitimately happy for them.
Right, and that's how I feel the same thing, you know? Like what I despise that I've hated since ever being a part of film school is a certain mindset that this artistic stuff is like the be-all end-all of what cinema should be. And
no, like, yeah, like, I've seen that too, and it's like, I love art films, but I don't think they should be the only thing that comes out.
Right. I tweeted actually a point today that I feel like if you're only in taking in art and films that are quote-unquote deep, quote-unquote artistic, quote-unquote masterpieces or classics, then you're shutting yourself off from really understanding the full range of the spectrum of cinema.
Right, and it's like, look, I often joke about my own shitty taste in films. I talk about how Redline is this totally deep movie, when in reality, it's a dumb racing movie. It's a dumb racing movie that's an anime, so...
Right.
Or, like, I'll say how much I stan Batman and Robin, which is considered one of the worst fucking movies ever. I'm aware I have bad taste. I don't give a shit.
Right, and, like... Your personal taste is not an indication of your ability to engage with and understand the art for what it is.
Right. Like, anyone who talks to me about film, not to toot my own horn, but people have told me that I have a relatively good grasp on the art form.
And you do.
But, yeah. If I'm talking to you about film, I have some idea what I'm talking about.
Right. And I'm assuming you think the same of me, I know what I'm talking about, like, and I'm just angry whenever I see the same trend over and over again of using progressivism and using anti-capitalism as to beat people up with. You know what I mean? Like, right. I loathe that, and I feel like those people, like, so, like, Marvel and Star Wars aren't devoid of artistic merits. They are made by individuals. Obviously, they are backed by multi-billion-dollar corporations. You're allowed to criticize those corporations. But the artists that work on those films give a shit. Like, I don't care what your personal opinion on how the film turns out. Those films are made by people that have put their heart and souls into it. Everyone from the top, the writers, to the directors, all the way down to the crew. You know, like the crew does give a shit about projects. You know, they care about the way that these films turn out, for the most part. I will say there's always tumultuous productions where there's crew that don't give a shit, but I'm going to give the benefit of doubt and give that most people who work on film will do so because they love it, you know. And I feel like draining these films as having no artistic merit and no care and no love put into them is such a disingenuous and shitty point to make. I'm just so frustrated because it's like the movie that you consider corporate slop may have saved somebody else's life. And I'm not exaggerating with that. Like, you have to think of it from that perspective. You have to give art the benefit of the doubt that it can move people, that it can touch people, and that people can can gain an entirely different perspective from what you see, you know?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Like,
yeah, film is an art, and art is ultimately subjective at the end of the day.
Right, and it's... I feel like, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. We're both on the same page with that.
Right.
I'm glad we could have this fucking space where I could say this, because it's been really frustrating me the last couple days.
Well, the Doug Walker Oni Play shit was frustrating me the last couple days, so...
Oh, yeah. Anything with Doug Walker pisses me off, because I know how it's connected to people who've been genuinely hurt, and I know people who've been genuinely hurt from the situation. Right. Right. So it's like, fuck you and the horse you rode it on if you're still standing Doug Walker at this point. You know?
It's like, yeah, he's not a good person, and he's very much not a good critic, so...
And honestly, that conversation, as much as we should say fuck Doug... We should also say fuck Mike Michaud, because he 100%. Is the genuine monster of that story.
Yeah, fuck Doug, fuck Mike Michaud, fuck Rob, fuck Brad.
Yes, fuck Brad.
Fuck Justin in the Justin Carmichael and the grave he's rotting in.
And fuck the people who have attacked Kalen, because because I'm sorry, you haven't had a friend you lost, then suddenly found out that they're monsters afterwards. Mm-hmm. I don't know how. I love Kalen. Sorry.
Kalen's wonderful. Yeah. I legitimately enjoyed having her on board for the episode.
I don't know how our audience feels, but I genuinely think that may have been the best episode, if not one of the best.
I'd say hers and the one with Lucia are two of my favorites.
Oh, you mean the one where I'm not on? Thanks.
I just think Lucia always has interesting shit to say, Crystal.
I know, I'm just I'm just teasing. Lucia was almost on this week's episode, but she unfortunately was sick, so we will actually have her on again at some point. But this episode was definitely a good space for us to have these moments of genuine frustration and excitement. And I will say, I know that Lizzie is going to... We will talk about this more. Lizzie is going to see Suicide Squad tonight. Mm-hmm. But I fucking love that movie.
Oh, it was amazing. Now that we can actually talk... Yeah,
no spoilers.
To give the briefest non-spoilery summation of my thoughts, it's basically... A lot of the plot notes feel in ways similar to the first one, but at the same time, it's different enough and actually of quality, so...
Right. I think you... No, because... So I enjoy the first movie. I will admit it's not like, technically a great movie. Mm-hmm. I think what I like about it is the cast, and I like the characters, and I feel like a lot of that was correct in that... Mm-hmm. movie. Like, I feel like obviously Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn is incredible. I even think Will Smith, his Deadshot was great.
And I will say, as much as I bitch about Suicide Squad, it is one of the few movies where Jai Courtney was allowed to give a good performance, so.
Right. As Captain Boomerang, right? And mm-hmm. I like the character. There was a lot of pieces there that I genuinely like, and I enjoy watching that movie because a lot of those pieces work. The problem is the pieces that don't work necessarily don't hold it up as a great movie.
Right. It has a lot of problems. And I know people say it would be fixed with a potential air cut.
I
don't think so either, mainly because they flat out admit that they just filmed with no clear idea of what the film was going to be. And it's like, I don't care how you cut it. A film made in that way is not going to turn out good.
Right. It has good elements, and I enjoy it for those good elements. But it's also not technically a good movie. So, but I feel like with the Suicide Squad, having one consistent vision with bringing James Gunn in, who's great at team-ups, as we know, team-ups of lovable assholes, like, he was a perfect choice. They gave him full creative control, from what I've gathered. The movie was allowed to be as R-rated as it could be, because that is very consistent with the Suicide Squad in general. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it took what was good about the first film and actually, like, made that the focus and structured everything around that, but while also telling a good story.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, James Gunn is a lot to credit for why the Suicide Squad works. But, I mean, obviously, in addition to how incredible the cast is. I mean, everyone was perfectly cast. Everyone played their parts well.
I will say, I thought this was a big step up for Joel Kinnaman as Rick Flagg. I thought he was a very boring character in the first one. This one, he was actually a fucking character.
He was, but I will give him credit in that I liked him in the first film. Like, I feel like
I didn't.
You didn't? Oh, okay. I think his performance to me, something about
his performance was fine. I just didn't think the character was well written.
Right. That's fair. I thought he was charming enough to work through it, and that continuing that thread into this movie with someone who can handle characterization probably a bit better. It was nice to see that happen. And I won't spoil the movie, but I do like his character. And I also, I don't know, it was great to see like the returning characters and in addition to the characters that were brand new for the film.
I will say one thing that's interesting is that Idris Elba as Bloodsport, I think his name is?
Yes, Bloodsport.
Yeah, he was basically originally in the script supposed to be Deadshot and Will Smith was supposed to play him again, but something went wrong. So they made him a different character, but kept his arc and story relatively the same. And one thing that when you know that, it does feel like this was supposed to be Deadshot.
Yes, it does.
But
because it's well written, it works.
Yeah, I didn't mind. It's like, but yeah, if you saw the first one and are aware of what what Will Smith's character arc, for as little as there is, was in that movie. It hits a lot of familiar beats just better for Idris Elba in this movie. So,
yeah,
I did like how he kind of had this arc about basically being a leader. That's kind of the whole point of the movie, honestly. That's he's the main character more or less. And it was interesting because Harley was kind of a side character this time around.
Right. Harley was, well, yeah. She was definitely a side character, but they gave her a lot to work with, too.
Right. And I was kind of happy about that, because as much as I love Margot Robbie in the role, she already had the first Suicide Squad, which was pretty heavily focused on her, as well as Birds of Prey, so...
Right. And Harley does work well as a side character as well, but I like that they did a lot with her characterization in this that works just as well.
Yeah, I like how they're working with this version, particularly when it comes to how her they don't outright mention the Joker in this movie.
No,
but there is a scene where her bad experiences with him do come into play. So
yeah,
I won't spoil how, but
it's definitely in the universe, and I think potentially post Birds of Prey.
Yeah, I think this movie takes place after Birds of Prey.
I think so, if I'm going to guesstimate. That would make the most sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially since Birds of Prey was, like, started with Joker breaking up with her and her becoming her own person, and now this is after that, so.
Right. I will say, I love that this movie features so many talented actors, and I'm not going to say who, but some are mainstays of Gunn's movies, like Nathan Fillion and Michael Rooker, you know what I mean? Like, and obviously his brother.
Yeah, Sean Gunn's in it. It's good. I also love the fact that the whole, one of the main characters in this movie, if you saw any of the trailers, is Polka Dot Man.
Yes.
And apparently the only reason James Gunn put him in the movie is because he saw a list of the dumbest DC villains, and apparently Polka Dot Man was number one, and he was like, I'm going to use this guy.
And used him well.
Yeah, I was surprised that Polka Dot Man, of all fucking characters, was actually a cool character.
Because... again, with good writing, you can make any of these people work.
Right. Without spoiling much, there's a joke set up with this character and something that happened to him. And the way it's reincorporated throughout the film, and especially the climax, is fucking amazing.
It's hysterical.
I was losing it in the middle of that theater.
I unfortunately didn't see it in the theater. I watched it on HBO Max, but I was losing it while on my couch.
Yeah, I'm probably going to watch it again on HBO Max. Like, I already saw it for free because I have a membership in my theater, so I didn't really lose much money going there.
I'm buying the fucking Blu-ray.
Yeah, I'm going to buy the Blu-ray, absolutely. I need
I'm going to own this. Yeah, if I own the other film, I'm owning this one.
Same, same. I do own the other I own all the DC films at this point, except Wonder Woman 84. Maybe I should change that.
I have the Suicide Squad Amazon edition Blu-ray that came with the Harley Quinn statue, and I've got the Harley Quinn statue, and I love it.
Nice. Mine's just the standard Blu-ray with the extended cut on it, which an extended cut that didn't add much.
No, it didn't add much.
It added one more scene with Jared Leto, so it is definitively worse.
That's right. It added definitely the worst parts of the movie.
Yeah. To be fair, I think it also added some good stuff to it. Like, it extended the bar scene, which was probably the one decent scene in the movie, so.
Talented actors given a scene to run with.
Yeah. And there was a scene added in that one that kind of really worked with Harley's backstory as a psychiatrist that I really like, where she's kind of psychoanalyzing the rest of the squad. I liked that too. I'm kind of shocked they cut it. Actually, no, I'm not, because DC was really bad in Phase One.
Yeah, now they've they've changed.
Like, they heads, found like... their. I think they found their footing, and like even at their worst films in Phase 2, which I would say the worst film so far in the post-Justice League stuff would probably be, not counting the Snyder Cut, because that's just a redo of the last Phase 1 film.
Yeah.
So, not counting the Snyder Cut, I'd say their worst film that has been made post-Justice League is probably Wonder Woman 84, and it's not even that bad. It's not something I personally enjoyed, so.
Yeah, it's okay.
It had its moments, and
I love the first film.
First film's fantastic. This one, again, had its moments. I liked the soundtrack. I liked the performances. I liked the cheesy action. I like Kristen Wiig. I just didn't like the story, and I thought one aspect of the story was fucking disgusting, so.
Yeah.
But even at its worst, it's still preferable to most of Phase 1, I'd say. Like, I'd rather watch Wonder Woman 84 over Batman v Superman, so.
Yeah.
For one thing, it's not as fucking long, so.
I think hopefully DC's kind of finding their footing, because I love DC. I love DC comics and characters. Their stories have always kind of hooked me a bit more than Marvel's, but for some reason the Marvel Cinematic Universe has made me happy. You know what I mean? So like, yeah, I'm always a fan of DC, and I'm happy that finding talented filmmakers and creatives that do care about these worlds and characters, and I'm glad that the studio is not deciding to interfere as much.
And can I just say, it is so fucking wild that the only reason we got this cool-ass Suicide Squad movie by James Gunn is because Disney was stupid and briefly fired him.
Yes, and James Gunn got his Suicide Squad movie and two Guardians of the Galaxy things coming out.
Now making Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Yeah, and the holiday special.
Yes.
So, I'm very happy. For Gunn. I think he's super talented. I mentioned this, I don't know if I mentioned on the podcast, but I definitely mentioned on Twitter that I love a lot of Gunn's work, and I also recommend Slither. I feel like what I saw in the Suicide Squad, without spoiling, is like, oh, there's his roots, there's his trauma roots in Slither, where it's like very gross moments, but also finding a way to balance the humor and heart, surprisingly. Yeah. Like Slither is disgusting, but at the same time, it also has a weird sense of heart and comedy that just makes you feel good, you know? And I feel like the Suicide Squad has that.
I'll also say this about the Suicide Squad. One last thing I really want to praise about this movie in the most non-spoilery way possible. This film went in a few directions I was not expecting, especially in the third act, And I would say it was very subversive in how it handled a lot of things.
Yeah.
Like, there were bits where I was like, oh, I did not see that coming.
That's always great to be surprised. Same here. I was surprised.
Right. And
there were things I called before I saw the movie. I'm just like, oh, this is for this reason. That's for that reason. And yeah. That was right. But at the same time, you know, there was enough surprises that it didn't. My knowledge before didn't
hurt
it.
Let's just say, by the time the climax was happening, I was unsure of who was gonna make it out. So.
Yeah, same. I didn't know who would.
Like, I had an idea of a few. Like, I'm gonna say Harley pretty much has plot armor no matter which movie she's in at this point, because Margot Robbie as the character is like.
She's not a disposable.
Right. Okay. Like, she is very marketable, and I think they want to do another Birds of Prey movie, if I'm not mistaken, so.
I'd be happy with that.
Oh, I would be, too. I think Birds of Prey is fucking awesome, so.
Speaking of which, apparently Margot Robbie has been pushing the studio to try and include Poison Ivy.
Yes, please.
So
do it.
Can we do
Thank
this?
Thank you.
Like, can we do this now?
Please. Like, we already have King Shark. You might as well bring in Poison Ivy and pretty much make this live action the Harley Quinn cartoon.
Yes, yes. I also like that both King Shark in the Harley Quinn cartoon and in the Suicide Squad are lovable.
Yeah. Like, they're lovable for kind of different reasons. King Shark in the Harley Quinn cartoon is lovable in the fact that he's kind of the everyman of the group.
Also, he's a huge stan of Beyonce.
Yeah. But, like, I'll say, King Shark in this film is lovable in the fact that he just wants friends. That's all he wants, honestly.
And food.
Yeah, friends and food, which, you know what, I dig that.
I can relate to that experience.
Also, hand.
Yes, that is your hand.
Very good. Oh, Viola Davis fucking nailed her performance in this movie. She was outstanding.
Yes, she had to play the evil, you know, like, serious, straight person, but compared to all these ridiculous characters, but she played it so well.
Yeah, like...
She is an incredible Amanda Waller.
Yeah, like, I liked her a lot in the original movie. She's one aspect I will definitely praise, but she really got to be, like, fucking incredible in this one.
Also evil. Like...
Oh, yeah. I think she's one of the most despicable characters in this cinematic universe so far.
And Viola Davis plays her excellently.
Mm-hmm.
But you're supposed to despise Waller. I mean, yeah. She's not a likable character.
No, Waller is fucking horrible. So.
Oh, man. I can't. I'm so excited for Lizzie that she's going to see the movie.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk with her about it. We're going to have two episodes where we're talking about this fucking movie.
Yes, but maybe one where we'll just spoil it and we'll give a giant spoiler warning.
Right.
Like, we should definitely have a spoiler conversation about this, because I feel like that's a movie we can't ignore as the gals of geekdom. It's definitely a movie we can't ignore.
Yeah, it's so fucking incredible. I want to watch. I'm probably gonna watch this movie again sometime before the next recording.
Oh wow. Mm-hmm. I'm glad. I was like, you know, I saw you tweet about it. And I'm just like, I really hope you like it.
Oh, I loved it.
Because I love, yeah. So I'm glad when you came out of it that you loved it, and that we both have the same. We often have difference of opinion on movies on this podcast, but I do love when our love of something just like we meet in the middle.
Yeah. So yeah, if I were to point out a flaw with the Suicide Squad, to be the devil for a second,
to be that person, okay.
To point out my one problem with it, and only one.
Mm-hmm.
I felt some characters, without spoiling why, could have been better utilized.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, and you might know what I'm talking about, Crystal. Like,
are we talking about the scene?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I loved it, but I get what your perspective is.
Yes. Like, I wish a few characters, especially with the actors they got to play them, had a bit more time to shine. Because obviously, with a with an ensemble cast as big as they were showing off in the trailers and stuff, not everyone's going to have that much focus. So.
Right, and I do agree with you. And there's probably deleted scenes with more material from them. I guarantee that.
But the characters they did focus on were all amazing.
Yeah.
Honestly, John Cena kind of kicked ass in this movie.
I actually think John Cena is a good actor. I think he's a genuinely good actor.
Yeah, I liked him. I liked him in Bumblebee. I thought he was great in that one.
Oh, right. He's great in that. So yeah, he's a good actor, and he's great as Peacemaker. And
he
I'm
is
excited.
So stereotypically American. It's hilarious.
Again, without spoiling, I am very curious how the TV show is going to work based on my feelings of the character from seeing the movie.
I don't think I've seen it, but yeah, I think the funniest thing about this character for me was just how stereotypically American he was.
Oh yeah.
Like, I don't think I've seen a character this I'm a fucking American and you're gonna know it since Bandit Keith from Yu-Gi-Oh! Abridged.
It was in the trailer, but how he talked about how he'll get peace no matter how many women, children, and people he has to kill.
Yeah.
That's a great line. It sums up that character very well.
Yeah, fucking, oh god. Also, Ratcatcher 2 is the heart of this fucking movie.
So, yes, she absolutely is.
Out of all the characters, I was not expecting her to have so much heart, though my favorite character is either Harley or King Shark, so.
Well, what about Sebastian?
Sebastian was adorable, and he has the voice of Dee Bradley Baker, so I can't hate him.
Yeah, okay. Sebastian, you'll meet him when you see the movie, people.
Yeah. Yeah, and like anything that gives Dee Bradley Baker work, I'm fucking happy, so.
Yes, yeah. But I'm with you. Harley, Sebastian, and King Shark are my favorites.
And God, the design of the CG on King Shark was fucking incredible. I was not taken out of the movie at all by the effect.
It looked good, and it also, like, I feel like they found the perfect design balance between goofy, lovable, and deadly. Like, they found that middle ground.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how they apparently originally wanted a hammerhead shark design for this guy, but then went with a great white, and then it just so happened around the same time they were filming, the Harley Quinn show came out, and that used a great white for King Shark, so.
The great white design makes sense. It's a very, like iconic shark.
I don't know. I feel like hammerhead would look too goofy for this character.
It could work, but I feel like what they went with makes more sense.
Look, hammerhead sharks look fucking derpy as shit, so.
So I get it.
Yeah, like, I feel a great white was, if you wanted to strike that balance between kind of adorable, but also fearsome as fuck, I feel like the great white design was the way to go, and also giving him a dad bod was great.
And having him be the voice of Sylvester Stallone.
Han. Also, bird.
Which is in another trailer, so you're not spoiling anything.
No. I know that's in a trailer, so I'm not spoiling. Even then, well, how big is this spoiler of the fact that King Shark says bird?
And also, they already posted the clip of him talking about his mustache, so that's not a spoiler either.
Oh, God. He's so precious. I love him.
And everyone's such an asshole to him.
It's not his fault. He's trying, guys.
I think with this fun conversation about Suicide Squad and our endorsement to go see the movie, you should definitely go see it. I think it's probably time we wrap up this episode of the Gals of Geekdom. Thank you for listening. We will so plugs. Jazzy, you want to say your plugs first?
You can find me on, as usual, you can find me on Twitter at Lady Jazzington. Find me on Twitch under the same name. I am on a hiatus, but who knows, that might end depending on what's going on with my temporary job right now. Who knows? I don't. You can also find me on YouTube at Jazzy Oliver. I recently did another Death Note shitpost because that's what I'm known for on this site, apparently.
Well, I will have to go check that out. And my name is Crystal Williams, and you can follow me on my Medium, where I write articles every once in a while. You can also follow my Twitter at Crystal W. Rocks. Yeah, check me out. And I will also give you the details, the plugs for Lizzie. You can follow Lizzie at Lizzie Lemon Drop, and you can also find that anywhere. And you can also go to her TikTok account, which is great. She puts great content out there. So definitely go do that and support her as she's going as Harley to see the movie. But that wraps up this episode of the Gauza Geekdom podcast. We will see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Hand. We'll be right back.